I'm Heidi Kaiser, and this is Black Mountain Institute Conversations, an interview series produced by Nevada Public Radio's Desert Companion in collaboration with the Black Mountain Institute. Every couple months, we'll talk with BMI's fellows about their passions, inspirations, community initiatives, and, of course, their writing. Our first guest of season two is Alejandro Heredia. He is a 2024-25 Black Mountain Institute Shearing Fellow. His debut novel, Loca, is set to be published on February 11th, 2025 by Simon & Schuster. It tells the fictional story of friends Sal and Charo, two immigrants on uncertain paths. Sal's unlikely romance at a gay club turns out to be the catalyst for he and Charo finding acceptance, belonging, and ultimately a place to call home within New York City's vibrant LGBTQ plus community. Alejandro, welcome to Black Mountain Institute Conversations.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We are so happy to have you. I believe this is your first time in Las Vegas and the Mojave Desert. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And your writing suggests that you really have an eye for the deep magic of a new place. What are you finding here?
I am finding lots of quiet time to write, which is really incredible to find anywhere in any big city. But I'm also finding really amazing folks that know so much about food and art and performance and literature. And that's been really, really rewarding.
Neighborhood is an essential part of your work. For your fellowship, you live in the Lucy, which is connected to the Beverly Theater in downtown Las Vegas. Have you explored some other neighborhoods in Las Vegas yet?
I've been in the Arts District. And that's been really nice. It kind of feels like home a little bit with just the different shops and businesses that are there. And that's been a lot of fun to just walk around, get some coffee, grab food, meet up with friends. That's been really cool.
And what are the neighborhoods that are most meaningful to you personally?
In a lot of my work, I ground myself in being someone from the Bronx. I try to write about the Bronx in as rigorous a manner as I can. That means that I'm writing against some really popular and reductive stereotypes about where I'm from. Part of what I see of my work as a writer is to try to expand the imaginary around my neighborhoods in the Bronx and about the borough at large.
You live alone here in Las Vegas right now and left a partner and family back home in New York. How has that experience been for you?
It's been challenging. I think that we romanticize what it's like to move somewhere new and kind of start over. So it's been challenging in that way because I've sort of had to build a new community here in Las Vegas. But it's also been incredibly rewarding. I tell people that being a writer is an incredibly boring job because I just have to be home almost every single day, just reading and writing and making sure that I'm paying attention to my habits and my practice, my writing practice. And so because of the isolation is sort of there's pros and cons. The cons is that I miss my folks, I miss my partner, I miss my family. But the great pro is that I get to spend so much time in my mind. I get to spend so much time thinking creatively and critically about my work and the kinds of things that I want to create.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I mean, the intersection of your personal life and, you know, the story in Loca, because there's such an interesting role of solitude and loneliness, but also striking out on one's own. You know, like you said, getting out, the kind of romantic idea of sort of getting away, that the interplay between those two feelings is also there in the story.
Yeah, I find that it's funny. I did not mean to write such an anti-New York novel, but it's kind of what ended up happening. I mean, a lot of these characters feel very alone, even when they're surrounded by their supposed community, right? Charo is living in what I call, in my own work, the Dominican village. She's in the Bronx. She's surrounded by Dominican people. She's surrounded by some family friends that kind of she meets in the street at random times. But she still feels incredibly alone within the confines of her domestic life. And so part of what I was trying to explore is the ways in which we feel like we don't belong even in the communities that are supposed to be the places where we belong.
Besides neighborhood, another key aspect of your writing, at least in this novel, and it's really the bedrock of Loca, in my view, is friendship. Where does this come from? How does friendship inform story for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my own personal life, friendship has been the place that has offered me a home when identity groups or family or other sorts of communities have fallen short. And so I take friendship very seriously. I understand that in our contemporary culture, and I think for probably most of history, in many cultures, we don't take friendship as seriously. We are meant to find a life partner, we're meant to start a family, and that is supposed to be the nucleus of our lives. And part of what I'm trying to insist on through this novel is that friendship is just as important as the family that is given to us when we're born, and the family that we might even choose when we get married and find a partner and have children, etc. For the novel, friendship is a thing that ends up not only being a safe haven, but also challenging the characters in the ways that they need to be challenged to be better versions of themselves. I don't think that friendship is always about feeling comfortable or about going out and having fun, although those are great things and great components of friendship. I think friendship can be the thing that pushes us to be our best selves.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. We'll talk more about this later, but the people who become friends in the story fall in love almost in the same way that the people who become lovers in the story do, you know? They yeah. meet each other and they're smitten, and there's, you know, that moment of kind of discovery and approach. You have a fascination with the 1990s, and this story is set in 1999, a truly auspicious year, and you bring up Y2K and, yes. you know, some of the weather phenomenon, those sort of things that happened that year. Mm. Tell me about that preoccupation with the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, the question around the 90s began because I was curious about my parents' generation of immigrants. I sort of understood my own experience to a certain extent. But I was curious about what it might have been like to go to New York in the 90s, in a time before the cell phone, before FaceTime, before all the technological advances that have made it easier to have long-distance relationships, right? For my mother to be able to call home in 1995, she would have had to buy a $2 or $5 calling card that sometimes worked, sometimes didn't. Or she would have to write a letter back home. And those kinds of technology has made long-distance relationships, all kinds of long-distance relationships, a lot easier. And so I wanted to, just on a basic level, I wanted to explore my parents' generation of immigrants, but I also wanted to take the cell phone out of the novel and out of the sort of the conflict to try to explore how these folks are building community and building friendship at a time that is not now. I feel very passionate about thinking for myself and then asking other folks to think about outside of the ever-present now. I think we live in a time and in a culture where we're so attached to our phones, we're so attached to the news, we're so attached to what's happening every single hour of the day, not only in our own lives, but in the lives of the people around us, in the lives of our community, in the lives of the nation. And I think that's great. It's important to be informed. It's critical to be informed today. And I think it does us a disservice to think that right now is the only moment that matters. So,
yeah, and you focus on something at the turn of the millennium that many people forgot. I think we were all very focused on Y2K, and everybody sort of remembers that as a big non-event, but a lot of buildup, right, to that yeah. non-event.
Congress is set to the task of answering the question, will the Y2K computer bug bring about Armageddon? Or is all the hype overrated? One senator said the problem will be nothing more than a bump in the road.
We do not at the moment expect that this will be, as the websites are calling it, Teotihuacan. That's the acronym for the end of the world as we know it.
But I think a lot of people forgot about the hurricane and some of the weather events that were happening, and you really delve into the conspiracy theories around that. What drew you to that? Was it climate change, or what made you want to bring that into the story?
That's so interesting. That was one of those things that I didn't know that I was doing for years. I think for like 2 or 3 years, I think I was just writing the severe weather patterns of the late 90s into the novel. And then it was when I was working with my agents on the novel before we sold it, we were editing and she was asking me about specific hurricanes. And I thought, oh yeah, like this is this particular hurricane that devastated North Carolina and a lot of the South. And this was a year where there was so much severe weather in the United States. But really, it began because I was trying to reflect some of the characters' interiority and some of the characters' tumultuous journeys. And then I realized that I had sort of tapped into something that was really interesting, which was these weather patterns in 1999 specifically that broke, I think, a ton of records. I mean, these were some of the worst hurricanes we had had in the 20th century.
The 1999 hurricane season produced 5 Category 4 hurricanes. The worst was Hurricane Floyd. The storm itself was so massive, it caused 2.6 million United States residents to evacuate their homes.
And you're right to point out that so much of our understanding of that year is around Y2K. It's around the turn of the millennium. But that year also served as a big warning for what was to come and follow in subsequent years, particularly around hurricanes.
Yeah, and for me as a reader, and I think this must have been at least partially intentional, the weather certainly provided the emotional backdrop for some of the big things that happen in the novel. I don't want to give any spoilers, but that was definitely, you know, there were definitely clouds and, you know, storms happening in the story too. Yeah. You research your stories in part by interviewing people. I know this because you actually interviewed me to get insight into the work of journalists for an upcoming story that you're working on. Did you have to interview a lot of people for Loca, or were these characters that you kind of knew that were already in your head?
I think it was a combination. I definitely interviewed my mother, my father, my stepmother, my stepfather, all of the people that were part of the generation that I'm writing about. I spoke to these folks and just asked them questions about their experiences. That is a really critical component of my writing process, to talk to people who might have experienced the things that I'm writing about, or to read about the experiences of people who might have had those experiences. But I do think that at a certain point, I do need to take a step back from the research, because I'm a fiction writer. I'm a novelist at the end of the day, and so I need to invent. And if I'm drawing the characters only from my research, only from my conversations, then they're too close. The characters become too close to people who are alive, who I know. And I always want to be mindful and respectful of the people that I interview, the people who I speak to. And so after some research, after a lot of conversation with folks, I take a step back and I do a bunch of free writing in order to invent these characters. I always hear their voices first. I hear how they speak and what they say to themselves and to other people, and what they don't say to themselves and to other people. A lot of the novel focuses on characters who are withholding information from themselves and are almost deluding themselves into living the kind of lives that they think they should be living, rather than some of the people or situations that they should be responsible to.
Certainly that's the case with Sal.
Yes.
There are a couple of, I thought they were funny scenes. There are a couple of sort of funny scenes in the book where a character is kind of educating another one on identity or sociocultural issues, or at least thinking to themselves, like, this person needs to be educated. I'm thinking about, like, right at the beginning of the book where Sal meets Vance, and Vance says, like, I love these Spanish parties. Yeah. And Sal is like, it's actually not Spanish, but, you know. The way that you handle these passages read to me like someone almost with the patience of a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then Sal is, of course, a teacher in the story, and someone just sort of teaching the reader about the subtleties of culture and identity. Was that your intention?
Yes. I mean, and part of my intention was also to show that language is very complex, and language is ever-changing, and the words that we use now for some of our identities are not some of the words that we're going to be using in 5 or 10 years. And so we should be really intentional about the language that we use, and at the same time we should offer ourselves and each other grace because language should be something that is malleable and that is changing, not something that is fixed. And I feel that same way about identity. Identity is something that, to me, has always felt like something that is porous, something that is changing, something that is evolving as I grow and change and see the world. I don't believe in this idea that we arrive at an identity and then that is just sort of, it remains static for the rest of our lives. I think that is reductive of our own experiences in the world. And I'm in the business of liberation. I'm in the business of trying to liberate myself and trying to liberate others to think and feel as deeply as we can.
Yeah, and there's a really interesting passage where I think Sal is kind of having a conversation with himself about the difference between his identity and Vance's, both men of color, both feeling other in the community where they are, but then also feeling very different from each other. And, you know, Sal kind of like working that out and figuring out that it's also sort of a moving target.
Yeah, and Sal's trying to play what we call oppression Olympics. He believes that because he is an immigrant and had to start his life, at least to him, it feels like he had to start his life over, that he has it worse than other people. And part of what Vance is reflecting back to him is that being born in the United States would not solve all of the issues that Sal is facing throughout the novel, that it's actually much more complicated than that, and that the stories that we tell ourselves about our struggles, about our identities, about our experiences can always be more complicated and more nuanced than we make it out to seem. And that we should be challenging ourselves to do these things, regardless of what our identities are, regardless of where we stand in the hierarchy of privilege and power. All of us should be investigating how we relate to the stories that we tell ourselves about our lives.
If you're just joining us, I am talking with Alejandro Heredia, author of the forthcoming novel, Loca. He's in Las Vegas for the 2024-25 academic year as a Black Mountain Institute Shearing Fellow. Alejandro, every Black Mountain Institute Fellow does a community project or projects. What are you working on?
So I'm currently in the brainstorming process of creating sort of a one-day, maybe day-long event around the intersection of writing and activism. For a couple of years, I've been working around this particular intersection to explore and flesh out some of the power of writing in activists and community organizing spaces, but also, frankly, some of the limits that exist within our capacities as writers to be able to be engaged and be involved because of the nature of our work. And so I want to create an afternoon where we bring together writers and librarians and community organizers and all folks from all walks of life from Las Vegas to flesh out this issue together. What is the role of writing in community organizing spaces? How can language and literature and books be of service to folks that are on the front lines doing critical work to the benefit of their communities? And also, what are some of the challenges that writers might face and some of the limits? Although I believe deeply in this intersection and in this work, I do not believe that writing is the protest. Writing is not always the community garden. It's not healthcare. It's not all of these very, very important and critical things that we need to survive and live better lives. And so I want to create a space where we can tease out these questions, not in a way that feels like we're patting ourselves on the back as writers, but as almost as a call to action so that we can think through how we can be more critically and intentionally connected.
I want to get back to your writing. Do you have an excerpt that you'd like to read?
Yes. I'll read an excerpt from the novel. This is all you need to know about the context is that Sal, one of the protagonists, is having a conversation with his partner about how difficult it is for him as an immigrant. His partner is sort of challenging him a little bit to say, hey, no one of us has it worse than the other. We all just have it different. And so this excerpt is Sal parsing through that and thinking through what that means for him. He wanted to be simple, like it was for a long time. this story he's told himself about his struggling immigrant life. What's worse than leaving your life, your world, to begin again in a place that wants your working hands, but not your culture, language, history? Than living in this new place, feeling torn in half of two places, but somehow from neither at once. Being an immigrant in this story is hard enough, but being a gay immigrant, he never gave that much thought until he got fired from his last job. Now all the stories are confused in his head. It's not enough to consider himself an immigrant. Sal also has to think about the specificity of being Dominican and how his story is different from that of Mexicans and Central Americans, of being Moreno and how that affects his relationship to Vance and other Black Americans, of coming from an island, of loving men the way he does. The stories get denser, more complicated. Nothing makes sense like it was promised to him by his mother, who's always repeated that same simple story over and over again. All you have to do is work hard and you'll find your place.
You can really hear in this passage how relatable your writing is. And I hate using that word because oftentimes in literary circles, relatability is equated with simplicity. And yet your writing is very complex and also quite lyrical. Do you see your voice that way too? Or what was the process of cultivating your voice?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very strongly about writing fiction that feels accessible and that feels challenging at the same time. And actually, to me, on a craft level, that is the most difficult thing to do. I could write a novel with a very different vernacular, with a very different structure that alienates the reader more, that makes the reader feel like, I don't know what's going on here in this scene, or I don't know what's going on here with this character. But I wanted to write characters and I wanted to write a structure that felt inviting. And at the same time, write a novel that is structured in a way that lends itself to multiple readings. I hope that when people pick up this novel and read it the first time, that they'll be curious about what it might feel like to read it again and understand how Sal is withholding or suppressing his own emotions, and how Chato is dealing with the life that she's left behind and the challenges that she's had to overcome. Some of the best writers, people who I admire, like Toni Morrison, Edwidge Danticat, Zadie Smith. My favorite writers are people who write novels, who write fiction that is accessible and that challenges the reader to think or feel something new about the world, about themselves, or the world around them.
The characters in this story experience an enormous amount of trauma, both direct, physical violence and intergenerational, psychological, the more subtle. Is it too reductive to say that the journey that some of them are going on throughout the book is really a way of processing or maybe healing from this trauma?
I don't think it's reductive. I think it's quite insightful. I mean, I think that they are, in some ways, facing themselves and facing each other in order to heal some really terrible things that have happened to them. But funny enough, when I was writing it and as I was revising, I couldn't use the word trauma. And it's not because I was being evasive about the characters' experiences. I think it's because I view my job as a writer to try to find language that is as specific as possible to the experiences of the people that I'm writing about. And sometimes I'm afraid of the language of psychology reducing the kinds of experiences that I'm talking about. I don't want the language of psychology to reduce and minimize the experiences of the characters. I want them to feel and think as freely as I can write them in the work.
Yeah, and it also just wasn't really, I mean, on a very basic level, basic storytelling level, I don't remember it having been such a common part of the current lexicon.
Yes.
In 1999.
Yes, I mean,
as it is today.
That was so much of what I had to keep in mind, even around the vernacular and the language of queerness, right? There are people in this novel, for example, who today we might call trans or non-binary. And language in the late 90s or even in the early 90s, in which when some of the scenes are taking place in the novel, this language doesn't exist, especially in the Dominican Republic. It's a very different vernacular. And so I want it to be as realistic and as honest and true to that as possible.
Another theme that really emerged for me as I was reading the book was intimacy. And I mentioned this earlier, both between friends and lovers and even family members at times. This plays such a big role in the story, I felt. And you write intimate scenes with such an interesting balance of like passion and compassion. Mm-hmm. there's like a fire and a softness at the same time. Yeah. And then, you know, that kind of got me thinking about the trauma as well, which, as you said, is not stated, but is clearly there. And how much you see intimacy as part of that healing journey from trauma.
So much of the intimacy in the novel happens through conversation and through characters challenging each other, especially Chato and Sal. If you were to just open the novel in some scenes, you might not be able to tell that they're best friends because sometimes they're bickering or going back and forth, or Chato is sort of pushing him and Sal sort of pushing in return. But I wanted to sort of show the reality of a real friendship, and a real friendship and intimacy in a friendship sometimes looks like softness, but sometimes it looks like sharpness. It looks like a fiery conversation. It looks like an argument. I wanted to be as true to that as possible, to show the nuance of a friendship or a romantic relationship.
Your next work represents a bit of a departure from Loca thematically. Are you able to talk about it, or would you prefer to wait until it's further along, or what can you tell us about that?
I prefer to wait. The one thing that I will say is that part of what I'm trying to do beyond this one book is to expand the imaginary around the Bronx, not only for readers, but also for myself as I research, as I ask myself questions about the Bronx and different points in its history.
I hope that when you get to the point where you're ready to talk about it, you will come back and yes. Talk with me. We have to leave our conversation there. Thank you so much, Alejandro, for taking the time to speak with me.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an amazing treat.
If you want to hear more from Alejandro, he'll be hosting an arts and activism workshop on Saturday, April 5th, and a book launch of Loca a few days later on Wednesday, April 9th. You can go to blackmountaininstitute.org to learn more about both events. This has been Black Mountain Institute Conversations, a Desert Air production of Nevada Public Radio and Desert Companion Magazine, in partnership with UNLV's Black Mountain Institute. It's produced by Ann Davis and edited by me. Christopher Alvarez is our sound designer and engineer. I'm your host, Heidi Kaiser. Talk to you again soon.